Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is January 13th, 2011. Of course, I'm Daryl Bradford Smith, and I'm happy to be here on this this January day for everybody to share some information with, to talk to someone who I have spent a great deal of time learning in partnership with, because she has been doing research in an area that I did not have any expertise in. I can claim that I have nominal knowledge about the subjects we're going to talk about today, but I have also been a part of her learning to things that she was not necessarily up to speed on, and she's appreciated that learning part of her information. Her name is, of course, Dr. Nancy Turner Banks, MD, of course, medical doctor, knows from whence she speaks when it comes to the medical issues, and she's talked a great deal about AIDS, about vaccines, about the medical system and how we have kind of mechanized it to the point of injury to the people who are being served by it. Talked about world conspiracy when it comes to medical issues, and going back in history and taking a look at how we got to where we are. But also, Nancy, in her work, could not help but find certain other problems with our system that were helping to expand that medical system, and they were geopolitical problems. Basically, she looked into how Africa had been subjugated for not just decades, but even centuries, taking advantage of its population, of its natural resources, of its migration, and forced slavery even. And as a result, she came up with some ideas that kind of meshed quite easily with the conspiracies that we talk about on the French Connection. Now, people today, when they use the word conspiracy, they immediately think conjecture. Well, frankly, a conspiracy basically is a crime when two people get together and try to do something that is a criminal, and they act in concert. It's called conspiracy. Well, most of what I talk about on the French Connection are not theories; they've been proven. And I am proud to be at some point a conspiracy theorist, but I am also a conspiracy fact teller as well. And I'm going to bring up my guest right now, and we'll get right into the discussion. Nancy, are you with me?
Hello, Daryl. How are you today?
I'm doing okay, Nancy. You know, we're doing low tech today because I've got some computer problems again. I'm not sure exactly what those problems are. I'm trying to suss them out, but we've gone back to the old-fashioned recorder. The quality is a tad not as clear, but hopefully it's still listenable for the audience.
Maybe your computer got the H1N1 virus.
Something, yes. Well, that's possible. I mean, I'll have to go and give it a vaccine or something, you know. Hey, Nancy, you know, this whole thing is starting to turn out to be a real problem for the poorest among us, and as I said it would become, because it's, you know, they're the first to feel the pain. The unemployment rate is hovering around 23% right now. They're only claiming 9.8%, but we know that if you don't look for a job for 3 months, they knock you off the unemployment rolls, and now you're just a non-person, I guess. But there's a lot of pain out there, and people losing homes and losing jobs and losing losing everything. What are you seeing in your immediate area? How are people coping? You can notice it on the news reports. I know that crime is escalating in the country as far as.
The big thing in this area is crime. I know someone who manages an apartment complex, and the company that she worked for owns many apartment complexes in the Maryland and Virginia area in the United States. And what she has found in her complex, and she's been talking to other managers, is that the first month of the year, the crime rates for break-ins in the complex have been going up. So they've noticed that there has been an increase in crime. So that's one of the things that is not being discussed. Yeah. Very much.
Well, but you know, Nancy, you're not surprised by that, though, because I mean, people, if they don't have access to money, they're going to try to find it wherever they can.
No, it's not surprising. And the other big thing is the number of people who are now on food stamps.
Yeah.
That has risen drastically as well. foreclosures, we're not seeing quite as many, but I don't know if that's because it's the winter time and this is not the busiest season for home sales, or that simply people have bought what they can and they're tapped out. So the job numbers are not good, and even though the area around here, a lot of the employment is government, even in this area, those numbers, those jobs are being diminished. So, yeah, we're seeing it. It's not as hard hit, say, as the Midwest, but it's definitely showing.
Well, you know, we're talking end result here. I've maintained for a long time that the failure of the country happened back in 2007, when they first reported in August, September, that their bonds had failed and that there were credit default swaps that were going south. We knew that a tsunami had taken place. What we're seeing now is the continuing erosion of all of these different indicators, whether they be economic or crime or any of them. It's more of the same in a downward spiral, a maelstrom, if you will.
I don't know if it was 2004 or 2006 was when they stopped printing the M3 money supply.
Yep.
And I think for me personally, that was the biggest indicator that there were going to be some coming major problems, because that was a very unusual move. It was hardly spoken of in the mainstream media, and most people don't even realize how important that was that they stopped printing that.
Well, you know, Nancy, most people don't know this about you, and I will share that with them, that you've also got a degree in business as well, and so a lot of the things that we discuss privately as well as on the air, you have a business acumen that allows you to have some insights into that as well, which I guess, you know, when you're taking a look at all of these subjects we talk about, you definitely need to have almost a wide and broad ranging list of skill sets in order to understand it all, because it is an enormous subject. However, what we're seeing right now is a mix between I think a scientific dictatorship, a medical dictatorship, and a financial dictatorship all rolled into one, and it's coming at a breakneck pace. I mean, people think that because we haven't seen a complete erasure of activity, that means this tsunami hasn't hit. It has hit. It hit years ago. We're just cleaning up and filling all of the buffeting of the aftermath of it.
Well, you talked about the medical dictatorship, and something happened this week that was really quite important, that points to the, because you talked about you started out talking about a conspiracy, and people often think that these things don't happen, that how could so many things be coordinated. And this week, I would like to discuss briefly something that happened on Anderson Cooper, who was a so-called journalist here on CNN.
Mm.
And what happened is that about 10 years or so ago, a doctor in Britain by the name of Andrew Wakefield published a paper in the one of the British medical journals called The Lancet, which is a very, supposed to be one of the better medical journals in the world. And it had to do with a series of 12 children who developed autism after they took the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, the MMR vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the complications that many of these children develop are bowel diseases. Some of them can hardly eat any food. It becomes painful, and they have a type of inflammatory bowel disease.
It's like Crohn's disease, Nancy?
Yeah, similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
So the paper was relating the fact that these children, it wasn't saying that the MMR caused these, but it said that these children who developed autism after MMR had these particular problems. And the paper stayed in The Lancet for years. And subsequent to that, other researchers in the United States and elsewhere did similar studies reconfirming Dr. Wakefield's work. Well, about 6 years or so ago, this person by the name of Brian Deere, who is a freelance journalist who claimed he was a journalist for the London Times, started an investigation to discredit Dr. Wakefield's work. Well, it turns out that Brian Deere was actually sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry in Great Britain, and
which would be what, GlaxoSmithKline?
Well, guess what? You got it right. It turned out that was the company that was making the vaccine, and that was the company. They have what they call fellowships.
Yeah.
But it's even worse than that. It's the person who was a member of parliament who was also pushing Brian Deere's work. It turns out that he was a physician, but it turns out his father was also a professor of pediatrics, and he sat on the Committee on Safety in Medicine in 1990-92, in the period leading to when that particular MMR vaccine was finally withdrawn.
Yep.
So the father, and then of course the other people who were sponsoring this Brian Deere was the British Medical Journal, which is the trade journal for the physicians in Britain. And why is this big? This is big because the people of Great Britain and the United States and the world are expected to sacrifice their children, especially the boys, because autism is more common in boys than 4-to-1. And since they introduced these extra vaccines in the early 90s, autism has gone up in some areas from 1,000 to 1,500%. That's huge.
Yep.
And the boys are more commonly affected 4-to-1. So there's a lot of money invested in this.
But they are
allowing children to be sacrificed to protect their income.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the journalistic part of that you brought up earlier with the Lancet. I've always been familiar with Lancet's work, and I always gave it high marks for. I'm not a physician, but I actually would read articles that would come out of the Lancet from time to time, as well as the New England Journal of Medicine and JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And they, back in the 70s and 80s, they at least had some, in my view, and maybe it's because I was naive, it seemed like they had some journalistic integrity.
They did, but it's changed, because these journals, like everything else, one of the things that has really happened in every area of industry and education is that there has been this more and more control into single hands.
Yes.
There's more monopoly control because of the financial thing that you talk about consistently on your program.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the journals, the medical journals, also are now under many of them under a single unit. There's a company called Excelsior or something. I can't remember what the name of it is, but there are one or two companies now that own almost all of the medical journals. So now you have two companies that own most of the medical journals. So when you go to the internet and you want to buy an article from the journal, you have to go through one of these companies. So now you have that central control. But the other thing you have to remember is that the pharmaceutical industry is what supports these journals, because that's how they get their money, through these ads.
Yep. Yeah.
And of course we know that the controls in the pharmaceutical industry tie very much into what we call the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And so the same controls exist, and when you look, you see. So what I'm saying basically is Dr. Wakefield did some. It seems that his research was good research. It seems that it made the pharmaceutical industry nervous, because this is the big deal. The vaccination rate dropped in Britain from 92% to 80%.
And it's sitting at 80 now.
So that's a very big drop. That means that people are losing their faith in the system.
Yep.
And as you recall, last year when they tried to push that H1N1 pandemic on the world, it fizzled.
Yeah, no, nobody went for the shot. Now, I got to say, you know, I watched my younger brother as a child have a response to a vaccinations when he was a kid, and he went into convulsions and high fever, and he's always been an odd duck since that day. Something happened to the young man, and now this wasn't. I don't know if they had MMR back in the 70s, in the late 70s, but I know that it damaged his ability to be. He's kind of distant kind of fella. Now he's got other skills that are very normal. He's a bright guy, but there's an odd nature about what's happened to him, I believe.
So this relates to the book that I wrote, which is called AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire,
mm-hmm.
The Deadly Virus of International Greed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's very difficult for people, because people look at their physician as helpful, and that's how it's, most people who go into medicine want to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is not at the local level. The problem is, as you say, at the conspiratorial level, at the top of these pyramids.
Yeah.
The people who are controlling these systems and who are making the decisions at the very top.
Mm.
And there is a uniformity of thought, and there's a uniformity of how they function. And largely they function as criminal enterprises.
It acts like a monopoly in sorts. You know, you can see this, Nancy, also in publications like Scientific American, where new things come online science-wise, and these people get on board, and when you dig through it, you find out that there are money interests involved in the promotion of a lot of these so-called advances in science, and you find out that it's at the detriment of other good ideas. You can find it in automobiles, where they can run on water now by breaking the hydrogen-oxygen atoms, where that's been destroyed, and these journals will not allow these advances to come forward because they're controlled in the science area as well.
Well, it's the same thing as cold fusion. Remember,
yes.
Several years ago when they said cold fusion was a hoax when it was announced and it was successful? Now they're using cold fusion, but they're just not talking about it very much. So what seems to happen is that it depends on who is controlling this these inventions, and that's always, and how they want to introduce them to the market,
mm-hmm.
because that's always the key. And so, you know, if you're a brilliant inventor and you've invented something, you know, your chances of survival without protection from someone who's very powerful is slim to none.
That's right. That is right.
But the other important thing about this HIV, this MMR business, is it takes me back to the HIV business, because what was found and is that because they said that Dr. Wakefield, there was some fraud in his papers. Now, the biggest fraud has been the papers published in Science in 1984 by Dr. Gallo, claiming that he had isolated a unique retrovirus that later was claimed to be the cause of acquired immune deficiency, which led to later a syndrome of what they call 29 different diseases. Now, it's been shown that he never isolated, that he never followed the protocols that were necessary for isolation, and what he was calling HIV was nothing more than some proteins that reacted with the serum of patients who were sick at that time. So that all of that information has been sent to Science Magazine. It has been signed by some of the most top-notch scientists in the country, and yet they refuse to retract that. So they're attacking a doctor who is trying to protect patients, but of course they will not retract the information about the HIV.
Well, let me ask you about the relationship to this, because there had to be money involved or threats involved or whatever because Dr. Montigny over in at Pasteur in France supposedly came upon this HIV nonsense at the same time as Dr. Gallo, so they co-shared the discovery, so-called.
Now, these was part of the disinformation.
It is, yeah. Well, I wanted your take on that aspect of the disinformation.
Well, see, this is, you know, something happened in the 1970s. And I remember at that time Richard Nixon was the president, and they had declared a war on cancer.
Yeah.
Nixon, and so they started putting a lot of money into looking for, because somebody had the bright idea that viruses cause cancer. Now, before the money started coming into being channeled in that direction, the scientists knew that that was not a very a cogent idea. They already knew that. As a matter of fact, they were beginning to unravel the mystery of cancer, because they found that it more had to do with energy deficiency. But as that work was coming to fruition, all of a sudden money got thrown at the scientists who would look for viruses. And if you're going to throw money at something, people are going to take the money. Why not? So you had hundreds of virologists all over the planet who were given a great deal of money to look for, quote, cancer viruses. And they were for about 20 years they did this. Of course, they didn't find much of anything. And when that research was not coming to fruition, and they realized they had wasted a lot of time and money, that's just when the AIDS thing started showing up. That's when the gay men started showing up in the hospitals with these various diseases, mostly Kaposi's sarcoma and pneumocystis carinii, which is a type of fungal pneumonia, and many of them also had low white blood cell counts. So they used that as an opportunity to take this new disease and say that it was a viral disease. And so all of those researchers who were looking for viruses kept their laboratories going as long as they went along with that program.
Well, could you explain the significance of the HeLa cells, Nancy, and the cancer spread? And I mean, because it seems like the scientific community in the beginning was trying to do good research, and somehow it got co-opted for evil. And
First of all, cancer, let me just say this to you. Cancer is not infectious.
Right.
It's not infectious,
yeah.
Has never been infectious, and will never be infectious.
That's right, yeah.
So that's not the way it really works. Cancer is a metabolic problem. It has to do, one of the wonderful things about being a living organism is that we are organized energy. We are organized energy at the quantum level. And when that energy begins to be diminished, because usually of environmental factors, it could be cigarettes or alcohol or vaccines, or it could be drugs, or it could be any number of things that we come into contact with in our civilization. Cell phones, for example, which they know can cause brain cancer, and they're also covering up. So they're almost all of the products that seem to be being placed on the market, many of them are almost seem to be intentionally directed at disrupting our energetic system. And so what happened with these HeLa cells in terms of how they use cancer cells in the laboratory is that, for example, with the AIDS virus isolation, so-called isolation, usually if a virus attacks a cell, it destroys the cell, and then the virus are released into the serum. And of course, that really never happened with the AIDS patients, so much so that they had to put the cells from AIDS patients with cancer cells. And then they stimulated those cells with what we call oxidizing agents. These are agents that actually damage the cells. And of course, when you give something damaging to the cell ramps up its metabolism and tries to begin to deal with that damaging molecule. And so these, so the new proteins that the cell releases are what they called HIV proteins. But they, how did they know that those proteins came from the cancer cells or came from the cells from the sick patients? There's no, there was no way of knowing that.
So you know, this is why I brought that up, because importantly, there are scientific reasons why the things they've claimed are not valid, and I'm not going to get too deep into the science of it, Nancy, because it'll probably glaze over most of the people listening. All, suffice it to say, what you just stated was that there was a conspiracy to falsely report the origins of an illness that by and large is created by environmental stresses of whatever type, and in fact is being reported as a metabolic disease that is kind of spontaneous even. And it's not spontaneous. There are clear reasons for it. And let's say, for example, one of the people that has been doing a lot of research over the years has discovered that radiation from our environment, and you just pointed out cell phone radiation, this actually really helps the cancer progress along quickly, because irradiated cells react they mutate in very dangerous ways in the human body, and so basically what you're saying is that they're reporting something as a spontaneous event when in fact it can be you can lead it back to very simple scientific causes.
Exactly, and this is the other thing, and people get so confused about this, because HIV is not the same thing as AIDS. HIV is simply an antibody test, and it has in HIV truly has nothing to do with acquired immune deficiency. Acquired immune deficiency can happen for any number of reasons, which I go through in my book AIDS, Opium, Diamonds, and Empire, and that's really what I want people to recognize, that we are in the 21st century basically living in a toxic soup.
Yeah.
And some people, depending on their predisposition, are more prone to developing problems than others. Mm-hmm. And depending on what your predisposition is, you may develop heart disease or liver disease or kidney disease, or that you will develop what they call immune deficiency, which they define simply as a decrease in a particular subset of white cells.
Well, now I just talked about radiation as a progenitor of those of that disease state, but there are also another series of diseases. I mean, a disease state that can be brought forward by the use of halogens. Can you talk a little bit about the halogens in our environment, such as chlorine and other things? Because a lot of people don't understand that when we come in contact with these dangerous chemicals, we are putting ourselves at risk of having this mutating problem of cancer, are we not?
Well, one of the things that we seem to be deficient in the United States and probably elsewhere is a chemical called iodine. And iodine is needed for the work of our thyroid gland, which is a central gland in our body located in our throat. And it secretes hormones that are really required for the metabolism throughout our entire body. And what happens is that they put fluoride, chlorine, and bromide in the water and in the bread. The bread they used to put iodine in the bread, and they replaced it with bromide. And what happens is that these other halogens displace the iodine, making many of us iodine deficient, and therefore also that slows down our metabolism. It interferes with the correct functioning of our metabolism. And so many of us all the time are feeling tired all the time, and we don't know why we're tired. And the other thing that the decrease in iodine has been associated with is an increase in not only thyroid disease, but in breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things like this, Daryl, when you look at what they're putting in the water supply or how they changed the chemicals in the bread, that these are, this is not accidental.
Yes.
It's too consistent to be accidental.
Yeah. Well, and you notice that people, the first thing they do when they start realizing that these, that their drinking water might be killing them, well, what they don't understand is that the biggest organ in their body is their skin, and if they're showering in halogen-rich water, they're absorbing it almost as badly as if they were drinking it. I mean, they're swimming in the stuff. So, essentially, you're getting poisoned if you're living in a modern city that's using these chemicals to, you know, to poison their populace. Now, that's basically what they're doing. They're poisoning people. But, Nancy, let's go on to the larger conspiracy, because I did want to talk about the larger conspiracy that, you know, you've been at this almost as long as I have. It's six years, I think you told me, that you've been looking through the information here, because you knew something wasn't right, and you started doing kind of cursory searches on different things. And what have you discovered? Where are you in this process, and how did you get there?
Well, one of the things that happened to me is that, you, like so many people in the United States, we're told if we get an education and we work hard, and if we take the risk, we get the rewards. And so, okay, I did that. I worked hard. I was taking the risk, and I was getting the rewards. And then all of a sudden, things changed in healthcare. It seems like I was taking the risk and doing the work, and the insurance companies were getting the reward. And that's what happened when what they call a health maintenance organizations began to extract wealth out of local communities. They began to take wealth not only from the physicians and the patients, but from the local hospitals. And so the quality of the care began to diminish as the pay of the CEOs of these conglomerates skyrocketed. And so I said, there's something that I don't know that's going on in the business world that I need to be made aware of. And that's actually when I went to business school. And I was sitting in class one day, and in an economics class, which I had never, because I did mostly sciences, I had never really taken an economics class. And so I'm sitting there, and they're talking about fractional reserve banking.
Yeah.
And it was like a light bulb moment, and I'm going like, that can't be right. How could they do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I thought about it, I said, that's a great scam.
Oh yeah.
And then that really interested me to really look further into the banking system, because I had never really thought about it. And that's when I started really looking into the banking system, and I started thinking, you know, even when I was in grade school, I think in the fourth or fifth grade, they used to teach us about keeping a checking account and compound interest, and they don't even teach compound interest anymore. So, it took me back to when I was a kid and was studying about compound interest, and then how all of a sudden the significance of compound interest went away from textbooks. And so as I sat in that graduate class and I was learning about the banking system, and I was thinking, you know, because I wondered why all these educated people knew nothing. And it was because we were miseducated. And I had to go to business school to really even get a glimmer of that. And then even in business school, they don't really tell you the whole truth. You have to go out and really read and find out the history of what happened with the banking system on your own.
Well, I was actually educating my master's level students on some of the things that you were learning, Nancy, and I got to tell you, I didn't know. Now, I knew that, of course, we had fractional reserve banking, and I knew the premise behind it, and I knew the concepts behind it, and I never connected the dots because we're not trained anymore to look for conspiracy in things when we're part of the system. You don't start looking for those things until you question the system. And generally speaking, people within a profession are a little weary of looking at leery of looking at problems within their own system. And you'll find that with doctors. You'll find it with people in finance, business. You'll find, in other words, the people who should know the most about these things are the least likely to be digging through the reality of it.
Well, but once I started looking at the banking system, then I really began, because I've always been interested in politics, but I never, and I couldn't figure out why things just, especially after the fall of communism in Russia, I just couldn't figure out why things weren't working, why the world wasn't getting better and it was getting worse. And then once I really understood that the control of the planet at this point seems to rest with a certain group of people in the banking structure, then once I accepted that, then things began to fall in place about how the world was really being run.
But they fell out of place with your mainstream contacts and colleagues. See, the interesting thing is when you make the jump to reality and how things really are happening around you, you actually are severing your ties to the community that you once were part of. It's interesting because, I couldn't, my health wouldn't allow it, and hasn't for years, but I couldn't stand in front of a classroom of students and teach them finance now. Not the finance they want me to teach. It's impossible. I would be a liar, and I wouldn't be able to do that. So I have no road back into a profession that I once thought was my future. And of course, being a medical doctor, knowing what you know, it makes it very difficult to go to practice medicine in this modern system, because now you've become a pickle. You can't go back to a cucumber.
Well, one of the things about medicine is that there are a lot of different disciplines which you can bring into the allopathic system, and you can begin to expand the way you are offering to help people. In a way, medicine is kind of good, because no matter what craziness the allopathic system does, you can still find ways of helping people through other disciplines. And
yep.
So that's really one of the good things about healthcare. But the thing of it is that you have to be aware that those things exist, and that's the problem with the allopathic system. The doctors in that system are trained to think that the way they're doing things is the only way and the right way. Now, the allopathic system is wonderful for many things. For example, if you need to have surgery, if you need to have a procedure, the allopathic system is the system. But if you really want health, then you're going to have to move out of that system into other kinds of disciplines.
Yeah.
Because they don't know anything about nutrition, and very little about homeopathy or naturopathy or Chinese medicine or other ways that people are brought back into holistic balance.
Now, you mentioned just a moment ago about this awakening into the fractional reserve, and now that you've been listening to the French Connection for a while, you know that we don't even have fractional anymore. Now it's gone just at no reserve at all.
It's gone, no reserve. And I think that's the thing that people don't understand, and, you know, with this derivative business,
yep.
Is that how, you know, because in knowing that, you see, this is what people must understand. The fractional reserve system was a criminal enterprise in itself.
Yep.
But once they got rid of that and started doing derivatives, they knew that was going to cause financial chaos on the planet.
Well, they had their test case with the long-term capital management.
Exactly.
They saw that this thing was going to blow, and what it would do is cause systemic risk. And instead of fixing the problems from long-term capital management, they went ahead with the new capital accords, and instead of fixing the problem, they codified the system in this broken state, and we were guaranteed to have the meltdown, guaranteed.
It was absolutely guaranteed. And the thing of it is that anyone who was dispassionate and was ready to remove themselves from the excuses that were being tendered by the politicians, who were certainly the Phil Grahams and the Barney Franks of the world, and the Dodds
yeah.
from Connecticut.
Yeah.
You could see, anybody who was rational could see that this was a time bomb and was waiting to go off, and they were going to, these people were going to sacrifice their own country and many other countries to make the benefit of certain people on Wall Street happen. And they did. They've essentially sacrificed the country for what?
Well, but you talk about Wall Street as the beneficiary, and I say that they're only a stepping stone to the real beneficiaries, and that is that there is a political agenda, a geopolitical agenda, an international conspiracy that the Wall Streeters are just a part of. They're a subsidiary in this mess, and basically they're looking at asset ownership of all of the things of value on Earth, and they've virtually dumbed that particular element of their conspiracy, but also control of everybody on Earth through a banking structure that now will require you to step up to the electronic banking system that will allow them to monitor your purchases and micromanage whole populations of people electronically. We're moving now. We talked about scientific dictatorship. We talked about medical dictatorship. Now we're talking about an electronic dictatorship that is being put in place. The infrastructure has been around for a while now. Now they're getting rid of the bugs in it and putting in the infrastructure for a real lockdown on what people do with their money, how they receive their money, how they...
You know what I see, Daryl? It's not going to succeed. They have big plans, and there's no doubt about it. And let me say this. The people who are doing this are quite brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, quite brilliant. And so on some level, you have to admire their tenacity. But on the other level, you have to wonder at how stupid they are about the nature of humans, because they have very little regard for us. But throughout history, they've tried to do the same scheme over and over again. It's never kind of worked out for them. And so I think that, and this is the thing about the going back to the vaccine. As I said before, the number of people in Great Britain who dropped the vaccines went from 92 to 80, and it's going to go lower. This crucifixion of Wakefield is just that. It's nothing but a witch hunt, and I think people will see it for what it is, because the world, on some level, are really beginning to wake up. And so people are beginning to say no, and they're saying no in little ways. And one of those little ways is saying, I'm not going to sacrifice my child to the vaccine god. And so that's a resistance. And so I think from in medicine, the number of people who are going outside of the allopathic system, who are beginning to seek alternative therapies, and who are beginning to see how they could heal, and are simply not listening to what the doctors or the healthcare industry have to say about taking nutrients. So that's a rebellion. It's a quiet rebellion that's going on, and I'm very encouraged by it.
Well, I am as well. Now, here's the thing. We've talked about the hubris of this group, and there's a disconnect between what they believe about themselves and what they are actually doing and how they're perceived by us. You mentioned the vaccine rejection, and I remember a report coming out. I think it was the New York State Nursing Association, where they were demanding nurses take vaccines, and almost to a nurse, they all refused. They flat out said
they refused it. And yeah. They showed up on the steps of the state capitol too.
That's right, and they said we're not doing it. That's right. And now, what percentage of the nurses actually finally lined up and did it? I don't think very many.
Not very many, because I remember, the first time they tried to do that was during right after 9/11, when George Bush was pushing the smallpox vaccine, and the nurses rejected that outright. And then they tried to, that was more voluntary. And then they were going to make this last one, they were going to make it not voluntary. But let me tell you something. When a bunch of nurses get together, I wouldn't mess with them.
Well, I've always known that you go in a hospital, they think doctors are on the place, but the nurses actually do.
Yeah.
Nancy, we're looking at this global conspiracy, and it is, it is a conspiracy because, this isn't theory anymore. You've done enough of your homework. What are some of the seminal literatures or informations that have changed the way you see the world on a geopolitical basis, the books possibly, or possibly interviews or people or readings that you've done?
Well, the couple of things I'd like to focus on. The big thing for me, and I write about it in my book, was looking at the British East India Company.
Yeah.
Because that was a major player not only in why the United States separated from Britain, tried to separate from Britain. They were prominent in the pushing opium into China and also in the slave trade as well. But in following their history from the time of the China trade all the way up through the 20th century, the same families were involved in the international drug trade.
Yes.
And those same families were the families that started the clandestine agencies that seemed to have a foothold in most of the Western countries at this time,
yep,
including the CIA in the United States.
Yeah, they started out as the OSS, in fact, yeah.
They started out as the OSS, but I was able to trace the Dulles family, which is one of these families. And then the other thing in the United States, the drug money went to finance these Eastern establishment universities, Harvard, Yale, Columbia, and Princeton. And the drug money also has gone to support the corporate structure, because it's money that allows what they call the POP on Wall Street, its price to earnings ratio,
mm-hmm,
to be expanded considerably. And of course these universities get their endowments from their investments, and so if the investments are using drug money to pop up the prop, these schools become very powerful. But these schools also turn out people who are trained to be bureaucrats in this system.
That's right. That's right.
And so they are trained in, they come out of these universities, and they are ready to go. Right, for example, someone like Lawrence Summers, who was at Harvard, who was involved in bringing in really destroying the Russian economy and concentrating it in a very few hands, which you have talked about so brilliantly on your show in the past.
Yeah.
And so basically, under the guise of being economists and intellectuals, they rape and rob the planet. They are still privateers. Only they are privateers in very business suits, and they jet around the planet rather than sail around the planet. But they are privateers.
Well, you know, I remember years ago when I was studying, I remember that the workload in my school was enormous. The amount of production I had to put out, papers and all that, but the quality of the thought going into it was not required. It wasn't, the grammar was required. You had to be spell it correctly and punctuation correctly. But the quality of the teaching and the quality of all of the areas that I now today know as what true thinking is all about, what true research is about, what true intellectual growth can be all about, was not what they were about, Nancy. They wanted people specialized in a very narrow band of information, and they just wanted you to be a workhorse for large sums of information, but they didn't want you to be able to think on your feet.
Well, I remember, and again, in business school, you look at a case study and you try to see what happened in the case study. And I remember, and they're not always business case studies. I remember one of the case studies we were given was Admiral Kimmel and the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the assignment was basically to suggest how Admiral Kimmel could have functioned differently. But that was really a false assignment, because there was never any indication that Admiral Kimmel wasn't given the information that he needed to be able to do his job. You know, there was never any indication that the President of the United States was lying to the Admiral.
Yeah.
And that they knew what was, that the people in Washington knew what was on the horizon, and they put Kimmel there as the fall guy and the sitting duck. Well, if you're going to do an analysis of that, without that information, you're what kind of an analysis is that? But you do the analysis anyway. And so that's basically how they teach you how to analyze things without having complete information. And so you're always working within a system that is defined for you. And if and you're not supposed to go outside of that. You're not supposed to think about those other things that happened that created that situation at Pearl Harbor.
I agree with that. And I, you know, as I've come to be more mature in my understanding of this this conspiracy and who's behind it, and of course we know that not a religious group of people, but people who describe themselves as Zionists. The fact is that the forerunners of Zionism and the people who actually implemented the Zionist ideology are actually people who are using that ideology in order to forward this world government idea, but they're sitting in ivory towers in London or in Bordeaux, France, or in upstate New York, or in the case of Brothman over in Canada. They're sitting at different places around the world. And it's all about ownership of assets, and it's about the worker bee not asking any questions. It's not about the individual anymore. See, when I was growing up, I honestly believed the propaganda that my country was telling me, that the individual was paramount in America's thinking, and you know, if you can protect the individual's rights, everybody else's rights will be protected just by design. Well, that's not true, and what we've been marching toward in my entire lifetime here is top-down control, socialism, tax me to death and move everything into the hands of the few, and an elitist form of plutocracy that is really sucking individuality and individual rights out of our lives to the point now where we've been living in a tyranny for a very long time. Do you agree with that, and what's your take on that movement?
That's one of the things I do also talk about in the book, because for me, I wanted to look at it through the medical system, as how the medical system is being used to control people. For example, how the medical system is being used to control parents to give their children vaccines, or how the medical system is being used to convince people they have diseases such as HIV when they simply may have some metabolic abnormalities. So everything in the system is designed to be a control grid, and there's no better control grid than healthcare. And you can do that silently, for example, as we talked about, by poisoning people through their water, their air, and their food supply.
Yep.
The whole idea of genetically modified food, putting abnormal proteins that our system has never encountered into our systems, that's going to set off a whole new series of diseases. And so everything that's being done that affects our health is another part of this control grid. And so that's, for me, that is the tyranny that I looked at. Then of course I backed it up to the banking system, but at every level, including the healthcare system, that people are being herded into a corral in which they can be controlled.
Now, I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to David Pidcock's presentation from last night's show. He did a great job, and what he talked about, David did, was the bifurcation of our justice system from a common law system to a UCC or Universal Commercial Code system, and what we've got. He talked about admiralty or law of the sea, and he.
This is another major area, and I've discussed this with you in the past, and,
yep.
And once I had some understanding of how that has been, our educational system has really been lax in this area as well, because the reason we thought we were free is because of the common law system.
That's right.
Yet the common law system, but nobody is ever taught how to use the common law system to their own benefit.
That's right.
And immediately, the minute we're born now, once we get those social security numbers, we immediately go under the UCC system. We see, this is another thing. They're using the system, the medical system, to immediately separate a human being from its common law rights.
Well, Nancy, I got to ask you, since you worked in obstetrics and gynecology, you were in contact with a lot of you're a baby doctor in the first instance. I mean, not after the fact, not a pediatrician, but at, leading up to that point. So, when a baby was born in a hospital, have you ever encountered someone say, "I don't want them to be"? First of all, I don't want you to take a blood test of them. I don't want you registering them. I don't want you. They're not going to have a name.
I had some patients like that, and I work with them. There weren't very many, and I certainly, those at that time, those patients had more sense than I did about those things.
Yes.
But I respected that they had a right to what they wanted. They had a right to not wanting the medication or the vaccines or the circumcision or whatever it is they didn't want. And I truly believed in natural childbirth. I tried to work with the patients who wanted that and who didn't want any drugs or medication. And I tried to get them to understand that they also had to work on finding a pediatrician who would work with them through that. So you as the obstetrician have to be willing to support the patients who have that understanding. The problem is a lot of the doctors will not support that kind of patient.
Now, they actually are trying to threaten you in hospitals into acquiescing to Social Security and to naming your baby before you leave and registering the birth and all that. Are you required to even have a birth registration if it's a baby's born in a hospital?
You need to have that registration. But the thing of it is that you don't have to validate it before you leave. It has to be validated after the fact so that you, but the problem that I'm having right now, you know, this is what happens. It's like the income tax. When the income tax was passed, it was a voluntary tax. It had to be a voluntary tax because it wasn't, they were directly taxing you, which was unconstitutional, and they knew that. And so and even on the bottom of the income tax statements, it used to say voluntary. But they never promoted the fact that it was voluntary. And after a while, it was no longer voluntary. It was mandatory. And so that's how they introduce things. They will the Social Security number business, they are introducing it. They still say it's voluntary. But what they'll do is they'll have meetings with the nurses, and they'll tell nurses that you have to get these, you have to get the Social Security number. So the nurses are not going to know that this is voluntary, because they're being primed to think that it's mandatory.
Yes, that's my point. And the fact is, for registering for live birth, let's say the person decides to have the baby at home and doesn't register their child and doesn't do any of that. Are they in violation of law?
No. There really is no law that says you have to have a birth certificate or a Social Security number, and they can't make that law, because now you are a sovereign individual, and you can make up your own birth certificate, and you can make up your own driver's license and your own passport.
But that was where I was leading with that, because I did a series of interviews, and I hope to do a little more research on that as well. But there are so many subjects out here, Nancy, that we can go on in infinitum with all this stuff. But
people seem to think that this is not possible, and I didn't think it was possible either. But I was at a conference in Malta a couple of years ago, and a woman was there at this conference, and she had declared herself as a sovereign individual. She had her own passport, her own driver's license, and she was in Europe. She came from California to Europe, and so she passed every one of those checkpoints that you have to go through to get out of the country, to go through other countries, and to get back into the country. So she made her own papers. She did not have any state papers, and this was after 9/11.
Well, although the difficulties that they make you go through, the hoops they make you jump through, I remember going into the United States, and the man, when I was coming back to visit my children, asked me where I was going to stay when I was in the country, and I said, excuse me, I don't have to tell you that. And he said, well, yes, you do. And I said, no, I don't. And I said, it's none of your business where I'm staying. I'm an American citizen. I'll stay where I please. and you don't have any right to write down where I'm going to stay and what hotel and the rest of it. And he was asking me these kind of questions. Do you know, instead, I finally won the argument, but I lost the war, because as soon as I did that, they went through every single piece of my stuff. They threw my clothes out onto the floor. They went and looked through every single thing that I owned. I mean, all the way down to squeezing my toothpaste tubes and everything. In other words, they made me go through living hell because I said that I wasn't going to tell them where I was going to be staying.
Well, that's what they do. Isn't that what fascists do?
That's exactly what they do. And ultimately, I had to then they left it all sitting out there for me to repack.
Yeah, they were trying to show. First, they were trying to embarrass you, and then they were trying to show other people what would happen to them if they disobeyed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was an exercise in power, and that brings me to the point that I want to make. People need to really, for example, when I have discussions with people, they want to talk about doctors, aren't they terrible? I don't really do those discussions. What I want people to really begin to think about are where the power sources are, because those are the lovers of power are what you have to identify. Because the little guy who's throwing your clothes out of the suitcase is simply, it's like the woman in Abu Ghraib who went to jail. But she's not the one, even though she is certainly responsible for her behavior, she is not the one who authorized that level of barbarity and savagery.
That's right, Nancy.
And so you have to identify where are those orders coming from. And this is the other thing. The people at the bottom don't have to behave like savages. We are human beings, mm-hmm. and whether we're bureaucrats or not, we can behave like human beings to each other. And when we begin to not behave like human beings to each other, then we can be taken advantage of by these people who could care less about any of us.
Well, we've reached the hour, Nancy. I'm going to leave that statement as your last major statement. Do you have a last parting words for everybody on this broadcast?
No, I would just like people to understand that they have the right to refuse medical care. They have the right to refuse vaccines. And unfortunately, the state is interfering more and more, and I think parents especially need to begin to band together to figure out how they're going to protect their children.
Well, I will say this to everybody. We've known each other now going on a couple years here, a few years even, and I admire you more and more, Nancy, because you've turned out to be one of the most consistent and best researchers out there, and you're doing great work, and I'm very proud to know you. And I want to thank you for coming on the French Connection again.
Thanks, Daryl, and thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, that's Nancy Turner Banks, MD, friend of mine, very great human being, great American, great friend. So until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, take care of your families and be well. Bye-bye now.